Goldberger, and welcome to the Fordcast podcast, a Harrison Ford podcast where we go through all of Harrison Ford's movies in order so you don't have to.
We are in no way affiliated with NPR.
Or Harrison Ford.
Despite Lauren's introduction.
You know, this is actually a really long audition tape. I'm sorry I didn't tell you, but I really don't like Harrison Ford. I'm just preparing for my NPR interview.
She's actually playing the role of Sarah Koenig from Serial. She's auditioning for the movie role.
I actually auditioned for a role in Difficult People, and they were looking for, like, kind of someone to parody her. I didn't get it. They actually completely changed the part, so I'm fine that I didn't get it. But I was like, I need to get this audition.
God, Julie Klausner.
I thought it was Klausner.
Oh, whatever.
Here we go again.
You
say potato, I say potato. So today, unlike 2 weeks ago, we're sort of flipping roles here. We're talking about a movie that means a lot to me growing up, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Rachel does not have the similar affection for it as I do.
Like last episode when I went on a feminist rant, I will probably do that again this time.
We're going to go on a feminist rant about this. We're
going to
talk about it.
The only thing that's cool about her is she makes a tuxedo look great. The only cool thing about
it. Do you know, I didn't realize until I rewatched it that that's what she was wearing.
Was his tuxedo?
Yeah. I was like, okay.
I thought it was kind of hot. I'm like, I want a guy that I can wear his tuxedo, even though
I'm
5'2".
Let's go right into it then. Here is my issue with Willie, watching it again. And then I'll talk about my childhood thing because we are just jumping right into it. She doesn't have an arc. Okay, fine. You want her to be this character, fine. They wanted to have some sort of, you know, antithesis to Marion Ravenwood. Okay, fine. It does bother me that I read that they felt that the writers felt that this was a more realistic interpretation of a person or a woman in this situation. No. One of the writers said that he felt that a masculine woman offends him, that writing a woman like Marion Ravenwood is a man's idea of what a woman should be like. What the hell? Even one of the writers was a woman, and she said that she didn't think that she was, you know, sort of, you know, an anti-type character. But then
this is making me love Temple of Doom so much more.
I know. Maybe we shouldn't have skipped right to this. I say their names right, but William Huckett and Gloria Katz, who are married, who wrote American Graffiti, actually. And you know what? When I'm reading a lot of these interviews, it could be sort of progression over time, but Willard didn't like her. If you brought up the issues with her with Gloria, she was sort of, you know, unhappy about it, didn't want to hear it. But I realized watching it, if this is what they wanted to do, I would not personally have chosen this for the character. She is funny. Kate Capshaw brings a lot of comedy to it. She's wonderful in the opening scene. But she doesn't change. Like, fine, if this is the character you want to create and show, like, a different kind of character, then, like, have a moment where she then doesn't become a gold digger.
You want her to be Donna Noble.
Oh, yeah, I do want her to be Donna Noble.
Because Donna Noble, that's exactly... If you guys don't watch Doctor Who, Donna Noble comes in as this, like, brash, kind of, like, loud character that a lot of people did not like when she was introduced. And so they said, oh, well, she's going to be the new companion. And a lot of people were mad. But Donna ended up being the best companion because she had this beautiful arc.
Oh, beautiful arc.
That made her, like...
sad and tragic.
Yeah, and it was just, like, it went from... she like became his best friend and like this sidekick, and it was such a good arc, and it took this brash nature that like Donna could have, and it made it work for that relationship, where they could have done that with this, and instead they were like, well, this is what women are like, which I think is such a funny concept, because my new kick is I love the idea that they're like, that men say, oh, what is she on her period about women?
Oh,
I'm like, so then why can men act like assholes? Like, why is that excusable? Like, they don't have that excuse.
This
they can't say that they're on their periods.
This is what Gloria Katz said. She said, Willie represents the audience realistic viewpoint of what they would be like if they were a normal person thrown in the jungle. Okay, fine. True, she's not brave, strong woman, but she is a different kind of woman, and in certain respects, a more realistic one. That's the part that bugs me.
She's not more realistic. It's a different kind of person, which, granted, like, yeah, I never heard that about Willie. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Because that would be me. I don't like the outdoors. I don't like snakes. I don't like spiders. So, like, if you threw me into that situation.
I understand why they wanted to have a different kind of character. I want to go, okay, great. This is your idea. But characters should have an arc and they should change. And so I didn't realize, because going back and watching it, I thought I was going to hate her. But I mean, I didn't enjoy her so much, but I had a lot of sort of nostalgic feels from when I was a kid watching it. And so at the end, I went, oh, I see what the issue is. Because I think sometimes when people say, oh, I don't like this character, and people who maybe, or I don't want to say all men, but some men will go, oh, but she's great, she does this, is that they don't understand how we're seeing it. It's not that she doesn't fend for herself at some point and has strengths. It's these other qualities that I think a lot of us have a problem with Willy.
I think, because I just thought about this, the main problem with the, oh, characters have to have an arc argument.
Okay.
Is... if you're making it a one movie character and it's going over a specific amount of time, mm-hmm. like a year, a couple of years, whatever, fine. Have an arc because people change from one year to the next. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not all the same. However, with movies like this, Willy doesn't necessarily need an arc.
Well, for me, for her to be a worthwhile character, I think she did.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, it's what, a couple of days?
That happens in movies. You have an accelerated amount of time. But that's what I'm saying.
It's a realistic portrayal of how someone would go through that situation.
Okay, yes.
And it's a realistic it's a realistic arc because you're not going to change that drastically in 3 days. I think I don't like Willy because I'm that kind of person. Like, I want to always have a shower. I always want to be dressed up. Like, I don't want to be...
As am I. I would, you know... So I don't think I would be as... sort of whiny as she was.
That's my problem, is that she's so whiny.
But I would be like, oh, this is not, I'm not happy here. I think I would suck it up.
Yeah, okay. I say I'd suck it up, and then I had 2 outdoors experiences where I just complained and cried the entire time. So I think the reason I don't like Willy is because she is a lot like how I would react in that situation.
Well, that's interesting.
However, the way she handles herself when it's like a life or death situation and she's still reacting those ways.
Oh,
aggravates
yes.
me.
I got through it and I was like, okay, she's not as bad as I thought. I think also it was expectation because I had not seen it since mm-hmm. I was a kid. So okay, she's not so bad as I thought. Not so bad as I thought. And then 2 things made me literally say like, oh God, out loud, which was when she wonders if the Maharaji is single so that she can marry him and get his money. And then when they're in the temple and she goes, diamonds. Oh my God. This horrible thing is happening in front of you. You could die, and you're excited about the diamond? Oh, God, no.
Yeah, that's why it's like, I don't mind so much about her whining and complaining because I'm the same way. Like, I had to go camping one time, and I didn't want to do
it. It's the execution of her character.
And wouldn't let me out of it, and I, like, flipped out, cried, threw a fit, had a hissy, because I don't like that kind of stuff. So that is like, I'm like, cool, totally on board. I'm the same kind of way. You put me in that situation, I'm going to complain and bitch about it. But this wasn't just the way her character handled like that kind of stuff where I'm like, you're in a fucking life or death situation. Like, stop. Realize what you're doing. Like, granted, if you don't realize it's a life or death situation, completely different story. Because I've had moments where I like didn't realize something was serious.
Oh, yeah.
And then once
during
I realized.
9/11, I kind of went into this sort of like denial. You know, sometimes you just sort of your body shuts down.
Yeah. Well, that's like when we went and saw Hell or High Water, all of a sudden the movie theater, like the lights turned on and the movie stopped.
Oh.
And I instantly was like, oh, great. And I started complaining and bitching because I thought, oh, the movie just cut out. And then my friends had to be like, Rachel, think about it. The lights wouldn't turn on that quickly if the movie cut out. Like something happened. So I went from thinking, an inconvenience to, oh shit, this is a serious situation. But I had to like have someone point it out to me. So it's like, if they would have done that with Willy, like she could have complained and bitched on everything she wanted. But if someone had been like, hey, think about where you are. And then she had that moment that was like, oh fuck, like I can die. That would make
and
her
that's
such
what I mean.
More
it was like, I had expected to be like, she's, you know, horrible and I hate her. And I was like, no, like, oh, it's the execution. Like you could have,
she could have been so much better.
Kate Capshaw was really funny. And at the beginning I was like, oh, there's some really great comic bits. And then also just reading about the writer's point of view. And I mean, you can't really fault them, particularly Gloria, I feel, because it was the time. And like we talked about with Jedi, it's like all of a sudden we're getting into the 80s and there's just a different mentality about women. I don't know if it's a backlash of feminism in the 70s, but it's sort of very interesting. And And William, one of the writer, again, their husband and wife, wrote American Graffiti, at one point even says that it was meant to be an antithesis to feminists.
What?
Oh, and Willie was named after Spielberg's dog, so we got another dog going.
Good. So glad that they're just dogs.
Everyone name their dog. Actually, no, Short Round is also named after the writer's dogs.
Short Round.
Should we talk about? Should we skip to talk about him? Okay, Round. But I want to go back to the beginning because the opening meant a lot to me as a kid.
Before we started, I said every time I see that little kid, all I think of is it's 007, not 00 negative, from when he's in the Goonies, and
I love him in Goonies.
Me and my best friend love the Goonies, and we used to watch it all the time. And her boyfriend hates the Goonies.
Oh, why?
But he's like, the best thing is he's male me. Except for the fact that he hates the Goonies. And so she goes...
Did he see it as an adult?
I don't know.
Like if you see Goonies as a kid, like you have to love it.
I have no idea. But she like messaged me. She goes, the only problem is he hates the Goonies. And because her and I loved the Goonies. And that's why every time I think it's
now
Short Round,
I
think
say,
of that kid.
Goonies!
Oh, I love the Goonies.
Baby whoop. I didn't realize that this was his first movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, well, Goonies was later.
Yeah.
Goonies was almost the 90s.
No, it was not.
It was like later in the 80s.
It's like 85, 86?
Okay.
All right, you
that's
talk.
That's 4 years away from the 1990.
But
that's closer to the 90s. But that's closer to the 90s than this.
I consider that the mid-80s, but okay. I won't Google it.
I wasn't alive. It's anything before the 90s
oh,
and
I
then
see.
After. It's before
okay.
Rachel,
all
after
right.
Rachel.
I don't see it that way, but I can see how you would. But Kiwe Kwan actually goes by Jonathan now. He is of Chinese descent, but came from Vietnam during the fall of Saigon, actually, and was a political took a political asylum in the United States. But Short Round was named after the screenwriter's dog. But apparently, Short Round is also see. There's conflicting reports, like if the dog was named after the movie, or was like a weird coincidence, or I don't know. But there's a Samuel Fuller movie called The Street Helmet, which a young Korean orphan of the same name guides the protagonist. 6,000 actors auditioned, including his brother, which I hear this all the time. Oh, I went with my friend to the audition, or I went with my brother and my sister. It's like you go to something and you're thinking, oh, I'm not the one who's auditioning, and you relax, and then you book it.
Because yeah, you don't care.
Yeah. And the whole poker scene he improvised with Harrison, and they decided to put in the movie, and they were so impressed by it. I think is so great. And he taught him to swim. Harrison taught him to swim when they were in Sri Lanka at the pool after. I just think it's so adorable.
Oh,
and he's a stunt coordinator now because he actually was taught, taekwondo on set.
Because he did all his weird stunt things in the Goonies.
Yeah, so he
I'm totally
he
going home
it.
And watching the Goonies.
Oh, yeah, I know, really. So he learned it on set, and he's now a stunt choreographer, which I think is kind of awesome.
I'm great at stunt.
And I just talking a little bit about their relationship, that's what touched me in the movie, and I'd sort of forgotten. And I think also when you're a kid, like, who wouldn't want to be Indiana Jones' sidekick? Like, that sounds awesome. And I think I related more to him, but I'd sort of forgotten about the relationship. And when he was like, Indy, you're my best friend. Mm-hmm. I kind of got a little emotional. Like, it was really beautiful. I loved them together.
I hate Temple of Doom.
All right. Well, that can't be our entire conversation.
Entire conversation. Lauren explains how much she loves it. And then I just go,
I don't love it. Okay. Let's get that. Let's take that back. Okay. So
you just like it significantly more than I do.
Yes, I did. Yes, I do. And I was surprised watching it again that I thought I was. Having not seen it since I was a kid, that I was going to feel exactly like you because we had talked about it and I was going to hate it. There's some really great action sequences. The opening scene. Okay, let's talk about the opening scene. So I'm a kid who wanted to be a dancer and wanted to do musical theater. Like that was like when I was like really, really small, that was my big dream. So mm-hmm. I'm betting that I was switching channels and I came across this sort of Bugsley Berkeley scene where they go into this room and the music and the... And I was enthralled. I'm guessing that's why I started watching it.
I don't hate it. I don't hate any of the Indiana Jones. Even Crystal Skull, I find things I
really?
Enjoy
I
about it.
Really? I hate Crystal Skull.
I think it's funny. There's things I enjoy about it.
Well, it has moments that are funny, but I hate Crystal Skull.
There's like here's my thing about movies. There's always something you can enjoy in a movie.
Agreed. Absolutely
like,
agreed.
Even if you absolutely, like, that's why, going back to our conversation last episode about bad movies, it's like there's always one thing you can find that you thoroughly enjoy in a movie. Like, yeah, I don't particularly like Willy, but I do relate to her. That is how I would react. Like, I hate her for how she reacted in serious situations, mm-hmm. but then I think about how I reacted to a movie theater, and I'm like, I get her a little bit, but it still doesn't help that, like, that was what they feel like a realistic portrayal is. I'm like, no, because she didn't have okay, I just figured out what the problem is with her. She doesn't have nuance.
Oh, yeah, no.
She is.
Well, the movie's only so dark.
That. She's only that.
Yeah, and the movie's so dark, they sort of felt like that you needed to have this sort of comic relief, but it's still, it doesn't work. But if you take it from this amazing opening scene, it starts off with great potential.
Oh, it's beautiful, that opening. He's in the tux?
He's in the Casablanca tux.
I made Marika take me a picture of me once where I was imitating that picture before we saw Deadpool. It was Galentine's Day. We went and got pasta. I made Marika take a picture of me imitating that tux pic. And then we had the best interaction with a man who said Batman can't block a Superman punch.
When he's like, you know, behind when he makes the big sort of, you know, sort of symbol thingy fall and goes behind it and they jump out the window. And
oh, you mean the gong?
The gong. Thank you. And
symbol thingy.
It's so hot in here, guys. It's so
that's
hot in New York City.
That's all Lauren talks about is how hot New York City is.
No, because I feel like I have to make excuses to why I sound like an idiot. That's what I'm saying. I'm not being like, okay, so it's hot.
This is my excuse.
The room is white and there's no, that's me going, guys, I'm not crazy and stupid.
We're suffering.
Just really suffering for our art. Yes. But going back, okay, so that's a great scene. The up until they jump out of the plane is a great scene. Even the end with the rope and the rope bridge and him being chased by the guys with the samurai swords, like, or whatever they're called. I'm sure they're not called that.
They are called
the action
swords.
Scenes are really great.
Yeah.
And exciting. And I'd rather watch that than a lot of movies, including some Star Wars movies like Jedi. But I really think that it was the musical number at the beginning that probably drew me in as a little tiny child to go, oh, my eyes are little coins and I'm going to look at this and this is pretty amazing.
Well, I mean, like, that's, yeah. That's any, there's, like I said before, there's movies that, like, no matter what, there's a scene that you relate to, that you love, that is so important to you. Even in your favorite movies, there's those scenes that you hate and you wish weren't there.
Well, something else that I kind of wanted to talk about was I was so sort of enthralled with Short Round's relationship with Harrison that I came up with this idea because I thought he feels like more like a son to Indy than his actual son.
Shia LaBeouf.
Who we all can assume is probably not coming back. And we talked about in previous episodes that they want to do a sort of universe thing, that they want to not reboot it, but like have someone else sort of take up the mantle.
Oh, my God. What if
another white guy?
Listen, if it was Chris Pine, I don't even care.
Okay. Well, may I present my idea and then you can present your idea? Okay. So I know that the actor who played Short Round is now a stunt coordinator, but he is the same age as John Cho.
I would love if it was
now,
John Cho.
Now, he is not Chinese. He is Korean, but he is playing Japanese in Star Trek, so Hollywood seems to be okay with this. But there is actually do you know the hashtag starring John Cho or starringjohncho.com?
No.
It is a movement it's sort of a call to arms to bring Asian American leading men to movies. And you may have seen there were a lot of posters at a point that were Photoshopped with his face in it, like Avengers or like big movies trying to show like, hey, there are not a lot of Asian leading men. And something that I actually learned recently from being a fan of My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I know you are a fan of.
Yeah, I love that show.
And reading about it for this article or column that I wrote for Forces of Geek, this website that I have a column for about sort of the five movies that you should be watching, and also Masters of None, and them talking about certain subjects on interviews and in the show, that's something that I, as a white Jewish woman, did not realize is that there are not only not a lot of Asian American men who are leading movies, but they're not put in romantic situations. There's a lot of things that one of the co-creators of Masters of None, like, think about it. Like, how many Asian men can you think of have been either starring in a movie or been in a romantic situation and looked at as a sex symbol in America?
Well, yeah, I mean, I kind of recognize that stuff because my cousins are both, I have two cousins and their mother was Japanese.
Oh, cool.
And so they're half Japanese. And my one cousin, like, straight up looks like Pocahontas, like, because
she must be beautiful.
She's gorgeous. I'm like, my cousin Hana is amazing. And it's very interesting because to me, I'm like, I'm kind of aware of that because I was like, well, I think of like the representation that my cousins don't have. And like, I have, my family is very colorful, to put it easily. Like, I have my cousin Morgan is trying to be an actress in LA, and she's half white, half black. My cousin Hana and Jesse are both half Japanese. And so it's like, I look at this stuff and I'm kind of like aware of like, oh, well, where, like, I don't see the rest of the representation for my family. And that's the most I can do because yeah. I'm a little white girl. So it's like the most I can do is see like, okay, cool. My family isn't my cousins aren't represented in this. This person isn't represented in this. And so it's really interesting because like, that's why for me, I went into Star Trek Beyond not knowing any of the backlash about Sulu being gay.
Mm-hmm.
No idea it was happening. Like, I don't know where I was in the world that I missed all this because my friends were like, you didn't know?
You were in a Chris Pine hole.
No, like, they were like, you didn't know? I was like, no, I had no idea that there was backlash that, like, he was going to be gay. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
And I cried when it was him and he it was John Cho, and then one of the writers that co-wrote it with Simon Pegg mm-hmm. was his husband, because John Cho said, if Sulu's gay, he's going to have a Asian husband. Mm-hmm. But he's like, I don't want a white yeah. husband.
Well, that's
and
good.
So then it was like beautiful. And I cried in Star Trek Beyond. And my friend was beside me. And he was like, you didn't know? I was like, no, this is so cute. And I was like sobbing in the theater watching this
well,
moment.
Some people, which I didn't realize, also think that Short Round is a little racist. But he has a real name. In the novelization, his name is Wan Lee or Wayne Lee. I may be saying it incorrectly. So that you can use his real name, or maybe he takes on the name Indiana or something. But like, I could totally see that. I mean, we don't see Short Round again. He never mentions him. Like that he, I don't know, maybe paid for his schooling and he's an archaeologist now and he can take on
and
the
he's
mantle.
John Cho.
And he's John Cho. And it doesn't have to be John Cho because maybe we
no,
can.
No, you gave me John Cho.
I want it to be him. But maybe they will want to cast someone who actually is Chinese.
I mean, I did tweet to John Cho about a fedora the
I
other day.
I did see that.
And he did respond.
I came up with the idea and then I realized that there was this, you know, sort of, you know, hashtag website, which you should definitely check out. If someone wants to Photoshop John Cho's face on a Harrison Ford Indiana Jones
Philip,
poster.
My friend Philip, who did it for Connor Ratliff and Brandon
Scott Jones. We should
totally
do it. Hashtag starring John Cho. So we could use this, you know, call of arms to bring more Asian American leading men by making him the new face of Indiana Jones. That is my idea.
I think that's a cool idea. I think I am an advocate for, I like the idea of like the female Ghostbusters or like changing course, the yeah. race of these characters. Like
it's important to young
it's
people.
It's important, but at the same time, I also feel like we need to stop doing that and actually write characters.
Well, yeah,
for
there's
that
too.
That's part of the problem.
There's absolutely that too.
And I
which we talked about as well.
Said
like,
it. There was an actor who, like, he's a, I forget who it is, but they have, they're very big advocate on, like, it's not that we're, maybe it was Chiwetel Ejiofor, I can't remember, but it was like an actor who was basically saying, it's not the just cast, it's not blind casting, it's writing roles. No,
yes.
It was Leslie Odom Jr. I'm going crazy.
How could
it's
you forget
writing,
Leslie Odom
it's
Jr.?
It's Leslie Odom Jr. But it's the writing the roles
oh,
for
yes. this,
for people of color, for women, because what's happening is we're writing these roles and then we're like, okay, well then let's just blind cast. It's like, no, that's still not what they want. They want these stories to be told and you are not telling them.
Yeah.
Instead, you're just...
No, that's the next step and that's important.
Yeah.
And Gina Davis, because I didn't think we were going to talk about it. I can't think of the name of this wonderful foundation that she is a part of, but it's about bringing more women to screenplays and to entertainment and to having a role and a voice in general. And one of the big examples that they use is that if you look at a script, and I see it looking at, you know, breakdowns of like casting auditions is... A lot of times people just default to even just the person, the cook or the waiter, male, 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 male.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense too, it's that having the idea in your head, well, maybe I'll make some more of these characters women, or I'll make more of these characters of a different race, or I'll write a story that doesn't have to do with the fact that they are of a different race. So that is definitely the next step, is to think of how to put diversity into entertainment that is not just exactly blind casting. That is definitely the next step. I agree.
Yeah. My, what I want, I just wanted
to. Oh, okay, yeah. It's only fair that you give your idea.
I just wanted to be Chris Pine because I feel like Chris Pine is the Paul Newman, Harrison Ford of like the 21st century.
I want Chris Pratt. If it's going to be another Wi-Fi, Chris Pratt.
No.
But no, I want
make
my
Chris
idea.
Chris Pratt I want John Cho. Make Chris Pratt fat again and make Chris Pratt the Pratt I love.
Oh.
Quit making him a leading man and make him fat.
You're bitter, aren't you?
I'm okay. Andy Dwyer was the best character Chris Pratt ever played.
It's a character, Rachel.
Listen, I like hot Chris Pratt. I'm fine with hot Chris Pratt, but I am so done and I'm so mad they're making him this smartass because that's not what makes Chris Pratt charming. Chris Pratt is like this lovable goofball and they're making him a smart ass in all these movies. I'm like that's not why you love Chris Pratt.
I think he's good at both, but continue.
It's fine
because I feel like this is also a great segue into how Harrison looks in the movie.
Yeah, but yeah, it is. Because
but do you want to present your idea first?
I just want any movie they're remaking, just get like with that's a Harrison Ford movie, just give me Pine. And I'm totes okay with it.
Hashtag give me Pine.
Give me Pine. Because I said this, and I don't think I tweeted it, and I should have, that Chris Pine is my 1975, 1980 Harrison Ford,
You said something like that on the show,
did
though.
I don't remember. Yeah. I was like, I couldn't remember where I said it, but I remember saying it.
I mean, you hinted to it, maybe not in that sentence.
Yeah, but that's to me, like, I was like, yeah, when I'm old, I'm going to be like, I was alive when that looked good. And that's like, because I don't, funny. I've seen the evolution, because my mother is like the strictest critic I've ever met out of anybody. Like, she'll look at you and be like, oh, you look so good, but you can lose 10 pounds.
Oh,
you can. I love my mom, but she's a very strict critic on everybody. And
she sounds like a Jewish mom, actually.
Again, why people probably think I'm Jewish. But I love her to death. And the first time we saw Star Trek, she went, he's cute, but he got holy skin.
What?
Which has come out that Chris Pine is very self-conscious about his skin, and Phyllis Leishman just calls it out. But,
all right.
So. I've seen the evolution with her to where I torment my mom to death. She like wants me to find a real boy and I just send her pictures of celebrities and she goes, please, real boys. So I've started sending her pictures of Chris Pine.
You have like a bit going with your mom.
It's not even a bit. I just send her hot pictures. I'm like, mom, I want this man. And she's like, Rachel, he's a celebrity.
You want what your mommy to buy you this man?
Like,
understand.
Mommy, buy me. No. And so I send her just pictures and I send her one of Chris Pine. She goes, oh my God, is he pretty? I was like, I've seen the evolution. I know that when Star Trek came out, Phyllis Leishman did not feel that way. And now she's like, have you seen his eyes? To like her friends.
You converted her.
I've converted her. And so.
Oh, speaking of.
He's my 1980s Harrison Ford.
I sort of joked with my mom about having a crush on, I think actually on Facebook, oddly enough, and she saw it, on Mark Hamill. And she's like, no, Harrison Ford is my type. And I was like, oh, that's where I get it.
Oh, yeah. My mom. texted me one time and goes, he's more my type than yours, about Harrison Ford, which I was like,
that was
first
of
all,
age, right?
Yeah, I was like, because of the age, because I was like, first of all, mom, that's not true. I was like, anyone knows exactly what my type is. I was like, and it's definitely like the tall, sandy, blonde, brown haired boys that are rugged, hence why I like Pine and Ford.
You definitely.
I have a type.
You definitely have a type. Okay. So.
But yeah.
So how he looks in this movie. And you had warned me. Like, I had not seen it in a while.
I told you I fell up the subway stairs. Like, I tripped up the subway stairs.
It's funny. You kept talking about his arms, and I thought you meant Raiders. So when I watched Raiders, I was like, I don't see his arms in this. And then I realized that picture, that famous picture that is always out there of him on the rope bridge with, like, the sleeve cut. Yeah, from Doom. The sleeve cut off, and I was like, oh, yeah. And then there's a video that goes around Tumblr of him working out. It's funny because Carrie Fisher talks about in Jedi that, like, around that time, there really wasn't sort of the fitness craze. Like, she was young, but she had to worry about, like, wrinkles and stuff, which is crazy because she was 23, but they told her to. So she did some weights, but it really wasn't a thing. And I feel like now sort of this fitness craze is sort of happening, plus he knew what he's going to have to do for the movie. But he actually worked out with Body by Jake, which was very big in like the 80s and 90s, if people remember him. I mean, he's still around, but like that was sort of like a big craze, Jack Steinfeld. And I didn't realize that because they needed to create body mass for the shirtless scenes. He could press 350 by the end and do 1,000 push-ups. Oh, your face looks shocked. What's wrong?
I am. That's nice.
Yeah. So he...
there is the... Literally, okay. I don't remember. I might have deleted
it. His back was killing him, which we'll talk about in a second.
So I might have deleted it, but I was... So I went through a phase a while ago. Now I'm doing it with Star Trek, the original series. But what I would do is I would just download Harrison Ford movies and watch them at the gym.
But yes, now you taught me that. That is how I'm able to keep up with our movies, is I watch them at the gym.
And so that's what I'm doing.
It's a brilliant idea.
That's what I'm doing with Star Trek, because they're like 40 minutes long, and I'm like, I don't got time for this. And so I put on an episode on the elliptical, and then I go for 40 minutes because I'm trying to finish Star Trek.
It keeps you going. Yeah. Like, if I just get through this scene, I can keep going.
Yeah, like I watched the same scene of Spock dramatically falling into a wall because I thought it was funny, so I was on the elliptical for like 10 extra minutes.
You were going to say Wrath of Khan for a second.
I've seen Wrath of Khan.
No, but I thought you were going to say you just watched him die over and over again.
No, that's
not God, sorry,
funny.
Spoiler from the 80s.
Yeah, spoiler for Wrath of Khan. Spoiler alert, they do steal the same scene for Into Darkness, except they try and kill Chris Pine, and I'm pissed about it.
I haven't seen it, Rachel. What
He's
have you done?
He's fine. He's in Beyond, and he looks great. Leave
Leonard
it alone.
Leonard Nimoy is fine?
No, not Leonard Nimoy. They kill Chris Pine. They switch it.
Okay, I haven't seen it. Don't tell
Into
me.
Darkness is terrible. I mean, I liked it, but I also love... I like Benedict Cumberbatch, so I didn't
me
have
too,
a problem.
So I do want to see it eventually.
Back to John Cho. Greatest John Cho quote is when John Cho talks about Khan and calls it, and talks about Richard, the original Khan. I blanked on his last name. Richard Ababar? Ababon?
Oh, the guy who played Khan?
Yes.
Richard Montalban.
Ricardo Montalban. Thank you. Oh, boy.
You think I'd watched enough Love Boat as a child?
I know, and I couldn't remember. I was like, Richard, that's not right.
I couldn't do it either.
No, Ricardo Montalban.
How could I forget Ricardo Montalban?
I don't know. I don't know how I could forget it. But he throws shade at the fact that Benedict Cumberbatch plays Khan, and he goes, Ricardo Montalban, a man of color, might I add, like in an interview for Into Darkness, and everyone was like, "Yes, John Cho," which I was like.
I'm fist bumping right now.
We're going into how I feel about Into Darkness. No, at the end they switch the scene from Wrath of Khan where Spock dies and then it leads into Search for Spock. They switch it so Kirk dies or attempts to die.
I'm not going to see this movie then.
See it. It's great. I mean, there's a really... The Spock and Kirk scene, I cried. And my brother was like... I remember seeing it with my brother, and my brother being like, they fucking just took this from Wrath of Khan, and I was crying. Like, it was such two different reactions because he was mad because they stole it from Wrath of Khan, and I was crying because Chris Pine was dying. And like, my brother was just like, this is stupid. And I was like, please don't die. Like, it was a mess. But... I forgot where I was going with this. It had a
Well, I can
great
segue
point.
If you want. We can talk about...
No, but what were we just talking about? It had a great point. I can't remember what it was.
Oh, see, this is good because this happened to me a couple episodes ago. I don't... Now it's
God,
like,
it was such a good point.
I don't feel as bad
about
anymore.
How I went on that tangent.
Well, we can come back to it in a bit.
Damn. I don't remember.
Do you want to talk about Harrison Ford's back since we talked about his front?
I guess. I'm so mad. It was such a good point, and I went on this tangent about Star Trek, and it just...
I had
like
a great point when we were talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is I forgot to mention about... We were talking about the Script Notes podcast, and I was going to talk about that that they had the transcript of them going through the ideas for Raiders, and then I just, like went out of my head. So it happens to the best of us.
Yeah, there was a whole point to why I was talking about Star Trek, guys. There was a point, and I can't tell you what that point is now.
I believe you. But I think we should go on to papaya enzyme.
What?
Yeah.
What the fuck is a papaya enzyme?
Well, we mentioned in the last episode.
Yeah, Herod is back.
Herod is back. He was in a wheelchair. And he was in a lot of pain through Jedi. He was in a lot of pain during this movie. Apparently being on an elephant is very painful because it like spreads your legs and not really good for backs. And then there's conflicting reports. There's a report that he fell off the elephant or that he fell off one of the mining cars.
Oh, Jesus.
And then like that was it. Like he was already, you know, pretty hurt. Lucas arrived on set and he could barely stand. He was like lying in a hospital bed on the set in between scenes. And Lucas or Spielberg convinced him to finally, you know, fly to LA for surgery. He had two ruptured and herniated discs. And they did this new surgery where they injected papaya enzyme into the area and it slowly ate away in the affected area. And his back was never the same after it, but they had to sort of, you know, pause. They tried to shoot around him as much as possible, and they actually ended up being, I think, behind schedule. Like, they didn't go too over schedule. But, you know, I think I know where they started to do it. Like, do you know there's this scene when they're in the temple and they put Indy in the jail and Short Round, like, hugs him, and it's so obviously not Harrison Ford from the back? I think it's his stunt double who has the same build and looks very much like him. But whenever I see a scene where like, I'm like, something's off. And then their head is like perfectly still. Like, that's not that.
Well, because that's very 80s. I started noticing how they do stunts nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you guys don't know, I spend a lot of time just on the internet watching stupid shit. And I think
everyone can relate to that.
Yeah. And so I was watching some fight scene, probably from Star Trek, because I'm in a hole. But I think it was from Beyond where Idris Elba and Pine are fighting.
You'd say this like I know. I haven't seen it yet. I'm watching too many Harrison Ford movies. I don't have time.
Yeah, I went through that phase. So they like are they literally fall down a thing and crash land onto mm-hmm. something. And I was watching the way they shot it because I was like, there's no way. Like, they already let Chris Pine get punched in the face by Idris Elba once. There's no way they're like throwing him down a thing mm-mm. and hurting his back. And so what they do is they literally like travel to a certain point and then he falls over enough that you don't see his head. And then you don't see his head again until he's getting up from falling. So it's like literally all they need is the body to do the fall.
But this, is more of a stand-in thing. Like
you know, that's what I'm saying. And that's why I was watching, like, if you watch old 80 movies, it's very clear, like, when the stunt double takes over.
Well, there's that too. But this, I feel like, was definitely something where they were trying to do some shooting around the fact that they didn't have Harrison on set. And it could not be his stunt double, but you wouldn't usually use a stunt double for that. Like,
true.
I worked on a movie once where the actor had to leave early, and this happens a lot, or maybe the actor wants to be in their trailer. In fact, I think this happens a lot in The Expendables 3. Someone and I on Twitter were like, look at these pictures, it's not him. They just do, it's called coverage, meaning they're covering the actor that that Harrison is talking to, like short round hugging him. And so they do over the shoulder from behind, and they get someone who looks like them and it never really does, because either the actor is not available or they're in their trailer hanging out. They don't want to do it.
Lame.
It is, because it's not fair to the other actor who then has nothing to act against.
Yeah.
Which sucks. But I think the most obvious thing, even though Harrison did a lot of his own stunts, which is a problem, is when they came back to do the mine scene, when he gets thrown in the mine car and Indy goes into like a little like ball, mm-hmm. because that's how you do throws, really, I guess. That wasn't him, and that to me seemed really obvious.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's also just impressive because being injured is enough, but being as old as he was when he made this movie.
Well, he was
in his 40s.
Early 40s, yeah. Which is probably why he ended up getting a herniated disc, and also years of being like, I can do that stunt, and not probably doing it correctly. I'm sure he learned to, because he became really good friends with Vic Armstrong, who was one of the people on Raider, one of the stunt guys, and one of the stunt guys on Temple of Doom. And he called him the most fearless actor he's ever come across, and he's a natural athlete. But I'm sure at the beginning he wasn't doing things correctly until he learned how to do it. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a guess, but they had a very identical build. And they would, you know, try to convince him, hey, you know what, it's not really good for you to do this stunt, because if you were out of commission, like, all these people on this crew are going to be out of work, and the money that's going to be wasted while we wait. And he'd be like, yeah, okay. And then he would just do it. So he kind of got himself in trouble. In fact, the rope bridge, I guess people were sort of scared about it because it really was like 300 feet below. He just ran across it to be like, hey, look, guys, it's not a big deal. Even though he knew it was really dangerous. So because here's the thing, like, there's insurance on a movie for an actor. So a lot of times they won't let actors do things for insurance purposes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they won't even let an actor really drive a car because they're afraid that the actor is going to like be hurt. And then the production is, you know, no longer.
That's why you hear in interviews, a lot of actors being like, I wanted to do it, but they wouldn't let me.
Yeah. But Harrison seemed to not care. And since Steven and him were so buddy-buddy, they said that Steven would be like, okay, sure. My friend, I'll let you do it.
To just prove my point of why I want Chris Pine to be Indiana Jones. He got punched in the face and they used the black and blue eye.
Yeah, but that wasn't the director going, hey, we should really have him punch you in the face. That was an accident, right?
But he did the stunt.
That's true.
I just want more Chris Pine in my life. And if he was in my movies I like, then I'm like all for it.
I love that scene, though. It's just so good, and that's what makes it so sad, is that I feel like where the movie really went wrong is in the temple, the whole sort of crux, or the MacGuffin of it.
Where he looked beautiful.
it's a really dark movie. And apparently Larry Kasdan was asked to write it. And he was like, I want no part of this.
What is dark? They steal hearts. They like straight up are just taking people's hearts.
Yeah. And putting kids to work. Like it's a really, it's
twisted.
There was actually a really big sort of brouhaha about this because it was, they said it was too dangerous for kids and people were upset and reviewers were like, you should, you know, you shouldn't take young kids to this.
You shouldn't take a young kid to see Indiana Jones in general.
Well, they're meant to be, I think, maybe not family films. But what I thought was interesting, which I didn't know, is because of sort of the uproar about this, and many reviewers felt that the big issue was that it was, you know, too dark. What I sort of love is Kasdan was like, I think that was a real dark period for Steven and George. And I realized that that's around the time that they were either getting a divorce or on the verge of divorce. And then they make this movie.
But for people getting mad, I don't know. There are so many movies and franchises that, like, as we all saw as kids, so we see them as kid franchises. When they are, when, like, as an adult, I see them, I'm like, that's who's okay. Letting children watch
that's
these?
That's something else, too, and I think that that's something that also happens with franchises is that it's adult at first, then kids start watching it on TV or now, I guess, you know, online, and then they go, oh, we have to now make this for kids. And I see, you're right, I see so many franchises where it gets watered down.
Well, no, not even that. I'm saying, like, seeing it as an adult, I'm like, oh, well, we should not have watched this as kids. But like,
that happens
watched
a lot.
That's what I'm saying. Like Indiana Jones, it's so much fun. It's so great. But we probably shouldn't watch. Like, same thing even with like Star Wars. Like, it's kind of twisted.
Not compared
and, like,
to Temple of Doom.
No, but I'm saying it's like Star Wars is also kind of twisted. And like, yeah you can watch Star Wars as a kid. But like, my little niece
it's
is
much more watered
terrified
down.
Of Darth Vader and like. And
yeah, I don't know why I wasn't.
She's four, but I was like, she's five, but I was six when I watched it. Like, she knows all
Everyone's
the characters
also different,
and knows
yeah.
it. Yeah, but it's just like one of those things where I don't know. I just kind of think, we think of these things as like kids' movies because we watch them as kids, and then you go back and watch them and you're like, oh, like my mom let us watch whatever we want. So like, I'm also a bad judge.
Yeah.
But like, sorry to keep doing this, but it's just, it makes a good point. But like, when I think about the fact that my great grandma let my brother watch Star Trek and like Captain Kirk originally was like the worst womanizer of all time, and it's weird to be like my great grandma showed this to my like 7-year-old brother and was like, here, watch this.
I think also back then people didn't see things like womanizing this, so
but
that's how
weird.
A man treats a woman,
but it's just weird because I'm like, we show kids this stuff, and I was like,
well, yeah, I think it's part retrospect. I think it's part, like, I just put on whatever was on HBO. I don't know why the melting Nazis scared me more than this. It was probably the age when I saw it.
Yeah,
this
they're
is,
taking hearts in this, and you're like, melting
I know,
Nazis,
like,
scarier
I mean,
than
I'm sure
hearts.
It was probably like, there's sometimes there can be a fine line between what you see between 4 and 5 or 5 and 6. Like, you just sort of mature differently, and people mature differently. But sort of getting, you know, kind of back on track, it's an action-adventure movie that may not be for young kids, but it's meant to be for that sort of genre, just like Star Wars. I mean, he's in that. It's an action-adventure. Spielberg was a little upset about it. He said it's not called Temple of Roses. But I think it is, like, really dark, you know, considering that there are a lot of kids in it.
It is very dark. And then when you compare it to, like, Last Crusade's just fun. And
yeah.
It's like... And
that's an example, of like, even though Last Crusade is my favorite, sort of watering it down. Like, it becomes much more a family movie.
Well, it's not even watered down. It's just fun. This movie was not that fun.
No, it was not fun.
And then it's not even watering it down, making it kids. It's just that it was so dark and twisted that it kind of like...
It shocked people, I think, in the 80s. Mostly it's the reviewers being like, I can't believe you did this.
Well, it's not even that. Like, if you think of dark, twisted movies, like, they're fun. I tried to watch Dahmer this morning, and they're still like... That's dark, twisted, and fucked up, but there's still, like, a quality about it that I'm like, I like learning about this and watching this movie, where Doom is just like, I don't want to learn about this. Like, there's nothing that intrigues me about sitting here and watching this, except looking at how good Harrison Ford looks shirtless at the end.
I you told me to take a look at, and it's the best he's ever looked, but he was working out so much, so it makes sense.
Yeah, and then I know we had it, well, I mean... I don't know what I was about
well,
to
did
say.
Well, did you
it's
notice,
about Carrie Fisher.
Talking about...
Carrie Fisher coming on the set.
Oh, you want to tell that story?
Sure.
It's a great story.
In the scene where he's whipped, she came to surprise Harrison Ford on set.
With Barbra Streisand, as you do.
Babs. Because Babs... Oh, Babs. I have a story about Babs after this. But when he's getting whipped, like all of a sudden in the scene, it was like the person wasn't saying their lines right. And his line is like, who are you? Or something like that.
Yeah, but the lines they were saying were like really obvious. It was, this is for making it the Hanover Street, Hanover Street, the worst movie I've ever seen. Like, it was about his career. They started talking about his career. Yeah,
but like, he says, who are you? And she says, someone who loves you, and then runs off. Because it's like, she was the one that stopped the whipping in the scene.
Yeah, so just to give people perspective. So Barbra Streisand comes on, apparently in a dominatrix outfit. And there's a video on it, and it's in all the biographies, so it happened. So the video is really grainy, because it looks like someone recording, like, an episode of Bloopers and Practical Jokes, probably, that it aired on in the 80s. Which was a show where they actually would show bloopers and some of them are gone. So that happened. And then after saying, you know, that's for making so much money in Star Wars, that's for making the worst movie I ever saw, Hanover Street, then Carrie come out.
And she stopped the whipping and he said, who are you? And she said, someone who loves you, and gave him a kiss and ran off. And then afterwards he realized it was Carrie Fisher and Barbra Streisand.
But also Irving Kirshner then showed up.
Oh, I didn't know about that part.
Yeah, then he comes out and he's like, Is this how you direct a movie? You know, as if he's like, you know, directing them. So that was some sort of odd practical joke.
Barbra Streisand only talks to men she wants to sleep with. And I understand that and I appreciate that.
Huh?
Jimmy Kimmel made the joke, but have you ever looked at the men she chooses to sing with on her albums?
Oh, I never thought
They're
about
all
that.
Gorgeous.
Doesn't she do a duet
Hugh
with Chris?
Jackman, Chris Pine, Bradley Cooper. It's like all men that like people universally want to sleep with.
You have that power. Why not use it?
Oh, you don't understand the excitement I have for this album coming out. Because At the Ballet is beautiful. I cried on the subway the other day listening to it.
Daisy Ridley's on it too, right?
Yeah, Daisy Ridley and Anne Hathaway. But not only that, she is singing one of my all-time favorite songs with Chris Pine.
Aww.
Which is, she made this mashup of I'll Be Seeing You with I Can't Ever Forget Her Face or something like that. I can't remember the title of the actual song. But I'll Be Seeing You is one of my favorite songs because I am a girl, and the scene in The Notebook.
Can I just say, that's actually one of my favorite songs, and I used to work on it in school. That's kind
of
funny.
I love I'll Be Seeing You. Well, same.
I love it.
I'll Be Seeing You and Someone Watch Over Me were always like, I wanted to be able to sing.
Not a big fan of Someone Watch Over Me, but continue.
I only love that song because of Mr. Holland's Opus.
I was forced to sing it in school.
See, I sing that song because of Mr. Holland's Opus. I have like weird reasons why I love songs, but like
Dreyfus,
I'll Be Seeing You. I loved before, but it became my favorite song after that scene in The Notebook where they're dancing in the street.
Oh, it's been a long time since I've seen The Notebook.
Well, they're dancing in the street and he says, we need music. And he starts singing, I'll Be Seeing You. And then it like takes over and it's Billie Holiday.
Oh, that's sweet.
And I love that song. And so I was like, oh, what song are they singing? And I read the title and all of them are from musicals or
good at that.
And so I like looked at him. I was like, okay, cool. Like, I don't know that. And then I realized, I was like, no, that's not like my I'll Be Seeing You. And it is. Aww. And so Barbra Streisand only associates with men she wants to sleep with.
Hey, listen, use what you can do.
Yeah. And so I love Babs. And I'm so sad I missed her concert in New York.
Oh, yeah. And I would have liked to have seen her at like the small venue she did. She was back at the Vanguard. I'm more of a Bette Midler fan, though. Like,
oh,
Bette Midler
I am Babs.
Everyone assumes because I'm Jewish that I love Barbra Streisand. And I grew up watching Hello, Dolly and Funny Girl. And I enjoy her young. But Bette Midler, like,
They called me Rachel Berry in high school, which pisses me off because Lea Michele's now like, Barbra Streisand, she didn't fucking like her beforehand. Sorry. I love Lea Michele, but I also have a strong dislike for certain things that she does. And that's one of them, is she loves Barbra Streisand, even though she was not a big Streisand girl until they were like, you should love Barbra Streisand because you're exactly the type for Barbra.
Well, that's not fair. You can be, you know, I wasn't a fan of Gilda Radner I wasn't a fan of Gilda Radner until people were like, you look like her, you should look her up. And I was like, oh, I think I know who she is. And
when I heard Funny Girl and like, kind of like, Funny Girl changed my life. And so I love Babs.
And for me, it's about Bette. Oh, Bette Midler's my hero.
A Star is Born with Babs. Like that version of A Star is Born. And then the way my mom loves Barbra Streisand. So
I enjoy her.
Streisand.
I don't know. But if you had to give me a choice, I'm a Bette Midler girl. I live in the shul.
Well, there's always
I used Yiddish,
like weird,
by the way.
I know you did. There's weird groupings. There's weird groupings of women because there's the original, there's Audrey or Marilyn, and you're either one or the other, and I'm Audrey. And then there's the musical girl, so it's Bette, Babs, Patty,
Yeah.
And all of that. And like, you just work your way down and every girl has the one they are.
So can I talk about what I was getting to before, which is, yes. Which I did know, which I love, is that Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom is the reason that we have PG-13. Did you know that?
I did not.
Spielberg was producing Gremlins and obviously this movie, and he was very angry that it got a PG rating, but obviously it didn't really sort of work. And he was like, we really need to have something that is in between PG and R. So they came up with PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for young children. It was sort of, you know, added on in 86. Parents strongly cautioned some material may be inappropriate for children under 13. And that really surprised me. I feel like PG-13 movies as a kid were like a really sort of big deal.
That was always weird to me.
How so?
Just because I don't really think it's necessary. Like, the PG-13 rating never really.
Well, they thought it was in 1983.
Well, yeah, because there are certain parents who like 84, stick to
1984.
It. Well, there are certain parents who like are very like.
I think it's good to warn. I think you know your child better than other people. There's certain R movies my mother did take us to. One, I think she regrets because it had a lot of nudity in it. She didn't realize, but
I used to do the eye thing.
We didn't know it was coming. It was breasts. It was fine. My brother's the one who, you know, got the iPhone.
My mom used to do it. She loves HBO. So I watched The Sopranos as it aired, which it aired when I was like 7 or 8. And so what we would do is she would just go, okay, close your eyes. So I would hear everything, but I just wouldn't see it. Same with Sex and the City, same with Nip Tuck. Like, I watched all this stuff I should not have watched. And so, like, to me, ratings are strange because I just never apply them.
But I think it's important because you know your child better and you can make the decision and it leaves it up to you.
Yeah.
So I wanted to quickly talk about something that I think you might want to close your eyes for, and it's the bugs.
Oh, no, I'm fine.
Okay. So there were 50,000 cockroaches.
See, 10,000, bugs don't bother me. Spiders.
Well, there were some spiders. Should I just skip that part?
Yeah, don't talk about the part.
Okay, so there were 10,000 insects, 50,000 cockroaches, 30,000 beetles, many locusts, and the word that will not be named.
I like how it just says many.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because I feel like today this would all be CGI.
Oh, yeah. You would not get me in a movie with a bunch of fucking spiders.
They had to apparently file down the teeth of the centipedes so they wouldn't bite the actors. How do you do that? And then they had like a few seconds to actually do it because they would go around for the light. One of my favorite stories is that some of the bugs would get underneath and get into the rehearsal hall with the tap dancers.
Oh, God.
And they, Kate Capshaw would be like, sometime you go home with a friend, they would just like be attached to you that you didn't realize that you had. And I think we're sort of going backwards because we skipped ahead and talked about Willy, but it was apparently called originally the Temple of Death. Just talk about like what was before the movie.
If you didn't think it was dark before.
Yeah.
Imagine it called Temple of Death.
And it's loosely based on the movie Gunga Din, which is a Kipling novel, which I didn't realize. And we sort of talked about with Raiders that I was sort of guessing why I thought it was a prequel because of Marion. Steven Spielberg actually did want Marion in it, but they wanted to sort of do something different. But the biggest issue was Lucas didn't want the Nazis to be the villains again. So they did it as a prequel, so it would be before that.
Isn't George Lucas Jewish?
No, he's not.
Okay, then that's why, because the Nazis are always the villains.
I agree. And I think that the movies work best when the Nazis are the villains. Those are the best ones.
Those are the best movies ever when the Nazis are the villains.
Well, maybe not in general, but like, you know, Indiana Jones, I want him fighting Nazis and I'm good with that. And I forgot. You're going to love this. So the writers of The Temple of Doom also wrote, as well as American Graffiti and more American Graffiti, Howard the Duck and Radioland Murders.
Great, shitty movies.
Yeah. They were actually went to USC with...
No, it's my dream school.
Yeah, they went there with Lucas. That's how they know him. And they were part of America Zoetrope, which I hope I'm saying right, which is the company that Scorsese and all of them...
because then George Lucas made his school at UCB. USC. Because the reason I fell in love with USC was when I lived in California, my school took the people who wanted to be actors and the people who wanted to be radio show hosts to a school, to the schools that were like best for that. So I went to USC.
No, it's considered one of the best, you know.
Yeah. And so like they took us to USC and then it was me and my other friend and we went and they took me by the George Lucas school. And I had just gotten a cell phone. So I took a picture and sent it to my brother and stuff like that. And I'll forever be upset that
I'm sorry. I said I just realized that I said Scorsese and I meant Coppola. Wow.
Same guy.
Yeah. No, not the same guy.
Same person.
But going back to sort of Harrison and, you know, us sort of slowly going and sort of figuring out his process and something that I feel has become sort of inherent lately when people ask him about if he was going to do Blade Runner 2, if he was going to do Star Wars before it was official, he was always like, well, we'll see with the script. So he actually would not even consider being in the sequel until he received the revised first draft. He was really hoping to do Stick, which was an Elmore Leonard novel, but Burt Reynolds took it up and wrote and directed it. And he was coming off his honeymoon with his wife, Melissa, at the time.
I mean, that's the smartest approach, because then when you don't do that, you get movies like Suicide Squad.
Yeah. And eventually he did say, which also was something with Raiders that the two of us sort of figured out, I think, is that working with Spielberg was sort of the best or the culmination of his experience as an actor, that he finally got everything that he wanted. And he said, this is very exciting for me. It was the best working experience of my life. So he, you know, just wanted to have a good script. But working with Spielberg has been very fruitful for him.
Yeah, clearly.
And that's everything that I really have. It did well, considering the critics didn't like it. It came out May 23rd, 1984.
The critics didn't like it for a great reason.
Yes, they didn't. But it, you know, it was the highest opening weekend of 1984. It was the year highest grossing film, but actually third in all of North America. Beverly Hills Cop was number one, and Ghostbusters was number two.
That Beverly Hills Cop beat it.
Yeah, and it was said to be noticeably inferior to Raiders.
Oh boy, that's funny.
Spielberg seemed to be very sort of offended that people really didn't like it.
Eddie Murphy beat it. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, in North America, I actually couldn't find the worldwide numbers because it's such an old movie. You know, some of the possible ideas that they would have done was he found a lost world of dinosaurs. A haunted castle,
so
which
Jurassic
eventually
Park
became
took that.
Yeah, a haunted castle, which actually, you know, eventually became the Temple of Doom, and he wanted to give him a little girl. I mean, as much as we sort of, you know,
that would be fucking great.
Yeah, talk about this sort of feminist stand. Several times, George Lucas is like, Indy should have a daughter, or Indy should have a girl with him, and he was naysayed. He was said, nope, we're not going to do that.
George Lucas did.
Yeah.
Yeah, because George Lucas is a piece of shit.
No, George Lucas wanted the girl.
Oh, okay. Who would say no?
Well, they said no to Temple, and I'm not sure why, but eventually it was the kid. It was Short Round, and the girl was going to be a virginal princess, but ended up being Willy, which is interesting. But for Crystal Skull, Lucas really wanted him to have a daughter, which he does in the series. In the young Indiana Jones series, he has a daughter. Apparently the idea was very similar to Lost World, and Spielberg didn't want to do a similar character with a daughter and a father.
Listen, in Lost World, the daughter of Jeff Goldblum does a gymnastics bar routine and knocks out a raptor. And if you're trying to tell me that girl, which you shouldn't have told me that. I could go on a rant about that character because it's like, it's trying to make you, the way that they casted that movie is like, you don't know.
It's my pet peeve. I'm going to correct you.
Oh, Jesus Christ. The way they cast the movie is they weren't like the girl who plays Malcolm's daughter. It's like, well, you're not sure if like it's his real daughter or he adopts her or whatever it is. And it doesn't really matter. Like it's still her dad. And it was like a cool way they approach that. Like they don't say anything. But then like their relationship really isn't there. So it kind of like defeats the cool purpose of them not mentioning whether or not it's weird.
I was desperate for Indy to have a daughter even before the series. I was really disappointed when I found out. It might have been Natalie Portman, but we'll talk about that when we get to Shia LaBeouf territory. Also, random Dan Aykroyd showing up in the movie.
I don't remember that.
He's the guy who helps them get on the plane.
With the bad British accent. Yeah.
And I was watching and I went, oh, that was because he was engaged to Carrie Fisher. But that he actually
forgot about that.
Yeah. But he was engaged to Carrie Fisher in 81. But then I realized he was also in 1941, which is the Spielberg movie we talked about that didn't, you know, sort of really do very well. Oh, and this is something that actually is the coolest thing I learned. The thuggy cult was real, and the word thug comes from them.
Thank you, Temple of Doom.
We have learned a lesson. I watched the History Channel and I learned that. So this is exciting because next time we have an episode, Rachel will have met Carrie Fisher because we will have been at Comic-Con in New York City.
And I decided what shirt I'm going to wear.
Oh, yes. Tell us what you're going to wear.
So I'm going to, Marika is going to help me, and I'm going to make a design of a shirt that is the Princess Diaries 2, A Royal Engagement. But I was like, I don't know if I'm going to do that. And then Lauren pointed out that it's kind of going towards her book.
It's advertising her book, which comes out October, I believe, the 18th. And we'll be at Comic-Con October 8th.
Yeah, because her book is The Princess Diarist.
Which I can't wait to read.
So I'm going to wear my Princess Diaries t-shirt.
I'm thinking maybe I should like record you on my iPhone like right after you meet her and like your pure reactions.
Oh, that's a terrible idea. Okay. It's a good idea because I'm insane when something, like I walked into Once when I saw Once for the first time, and Once is one of my favorite movies, like dying to see the play, and Arthur Darvill was Guy, like I was so excited for it. Walked in and realized they were already playing music on stage and started weeping. And my friend filmed it because she thought it was so funny.
All right, I won't put that for you, but that was something that I thought was good. But we will actually be doing something for you guys if you are at Comic-Con on Saturday, October 8th, because that's when we're going, even though it's all week. And we'll be at some select events. I'm going to a Doctor Who event at the Way Station.
I'll join her there, probably.
Super Week has not been announced yet, so we may be at some events there. But we at Comic-Con are going to encourage you to find us because we're going to have prizes for you. We're going to have Harrison Ford stickers that we're going to give out. If you can find us, we'll be on social media. We'll be doing Periscope and live stuff so that you'll know where we are. But if you find us, you'll be able to put your hand in a bag and pick out some stickers. And then a couple of the stickers will win you a poster. We have some Star Wars posters.
She's like telling me all this. Like, I know, but I had no idea.
Well, I gave you the framework of it.
Because again, Lauren knows everything. And I'm like, cool, I'm here. What am I doing?
Hey, as long as I'm doing my job and making it easier for you, I do not care. So if you can use the hashtag FordcastCCNY, as well as obviously tag us if you meet us and you win your prize and let people know what we're doing. We just want to give you stuff and meet you and talk to you about the show and tell your friends.
Thanks much.
You can also find us on social media at...
My Twitter is Rachel Leishman. My Instagram is Rachel_Leishman. And my Tumblr is Rach Solo.
I'm at Lauren Milberger, which is LaurenMilberger on Twitter. You can also email us at thefordcastpodcast@gmail.com. And for Comic-Con, you want to follow us on Twitter particularly, I think, which is thefordcastpc. But we'll also be posting stuff, you never know, where we'll be. So follow us everywhere, as well as winning stuff. Even if you're not at Comic-Con, we are offering lots of prizes on all of our social media. We are on Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram, where we actually do the movie that we're about to do. So it's all pictures. It's like picture spam of the next movie.
Which is Fordcast Podcast.
Exactly. And the next movie we're doing is Witness.
Yes. Her name's Rachel.
Rachel.
Look at my writing blog, madgirlwithablog.com.
Yeah, just remind everyone to check out Rachel's blog.
Probably write about Carrie Fisher on there once I meet her and go through that whole thing. It's just nerdy stuff. Also,
I have a column on forcesofgeek.com, which is a pop culture blog. My column is like a blog, but it's a pop culture website, and they have some awesome stuff. And so once a month, I post an interesting little column that you can check out.
Mm-hmm. And just a reminder, if you know Chris Pine, tell him I would like to go on a date with him.
Hashtag find the pine.
That sounds great. Hashtag find the pine.
All right. See you in 2 weeks at Witness, or we hope to see you at Comic-Con.
Bye.
Bye.